The deadly tornado earlier this week in Oklahoma recalls other recent tornado disasters in the Midwest. This hour, survivors from the Joplin and the Parkersburg, New Hartford twisters. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we talk with survivors of those devastating tornadoes in Joplin, Missouri in 2011 and the twister that struck the Parkersburg, New Hartford area here in Iowa 5 years ago. Also, storm experts Nate Snook and Bill Gallus. But before that, an update on the missing Dayton, Iowa teenager. First, this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In just a moment, we'll talk about tornado devastation, but first, this update. Investigators continue to search the area surrounding the community of Dayton in north-central Iowa for Kathleen Shepherd, a teenager abducted earlier this week as she walked home from the bus stop. A 12-year-old who was with her escaped shortly after the kidnapping and, except for some scratches on her arms and legs, thankfully is unharmed. Iowa Public Radio's Duri Buscarin has been covering this, joins me now for a few minutes. I know, Duri, you've been up most of the night covering this, but you were able to sit down with this young girl who escaped, Desiree Hughes, with her parents. Before we hear her description of what happened, tell us, why was she willing to sit down and talk with her parents?
Hi, Ben. Desiree actually approached the Dayton Leader, which is a small online newspaper run by two members of the community in Dayton. And what she told me was that she felt that she had been hailed as almost a hero and wanted instead, she said that she didn't feel like a hero in this situation. She wanted her voice to be told. There were certain details of the investigation that were reported incorrectly. For example, the block, initial reports made it sound like they were abducted on school grounds, but in fact, they were abducted closer to their home as they walked home from the bus stop. And so she was interested in giving her story, and she did so to people she trusted at the Dayton Leader.
Okay, and you happen to be in on that conversation. Here is a clip of Desiree Hughes, a 12-year-old who escaped from that kidnapping. Let's hear her brief account of what happened.
Well, me and my friend were, walking home, and this guy, we were almost home, and this guy stopped and asked us if we wanted to earn money on lawns, and we said, sure, but we gotta go ask our parents first. And he said that he would take us to our house, and we thought he was gonna take us there, but after a while, he just kept going straight and said that he would let us use a phone at his house. And then he took us to a hog confinement, and then, held a gun to us and told us to get on the ground. And he zip-tied our hands behind our back. And, he took Kathleen somewhere, but I don't know where. And he left the gun on the floor, so I took the gun and ran outside into the woods and hid and made sure it wasn't loaded. And then I, ran in the woods for a long time and then passed a field and then went in more woods and found a cemetery and I went over the fence and then I seen a bunch of people and I went to their house and I asked to use a phone and I called the cops and my mom.
12-year-old Desiree Hughes, who escaped after in a kidnapping, and hopefully in the near future we'll be hearing the voice once again of Kathleen Shepherd. She is the teenager, I believe 15 years old, Duri, who is still missing. What is the state of that investigation now?
There will be an update in Dayton at 4 p.m. They say they have more evidence related to some of the clues that they found in the investigation. The Des Moines Register is reporting that they are asking for more volunteers to help in the search. Hundreds of people have poured in from the communities surrounding Dayton and within Dayton to search for Kathleen. They're using horses. They're using ATVs. They've been searching the river. They're also searching these hog confinements. The suspect's body was actually found at one hog operation. And then, as you heard before, the younger victim was, she said that last saw Kathleen at a hog confinement. This area is dotted with these. It's a big part of the economy. And so that those are some of the things they're looking into in the investigation.
Briefly, before we say goodbye to you, Dury, can you see, having visited Dayton, how this has changed the community already?
I mean, it is such a small community. This is the kind of community where people have the names of the people who live there on signs on the front lawn. Everyone knows each other. They're very protective of each other. And so to see something this in a community that is so trusting and where crime is virtually non-existent, it's really taken a toll. And some people told me that they're not sure when they'll feel safe in Dayton anymore.
Okay, thank you for your reporting, Dury Bruscarin, and our hopes and prayers for the safe return of Kathleen. Thank you, Dury Bruscarin.
Thank you.
This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. The deadly tornado earlier this week in Oklahoma recalls other recent tornado disasters in the Midwest. Later in the hour, a conversation with the mayor of Parkersburg and the police chief at the time of that EF5 tornado there 5 years ago. But first, an even more devastating storm 2 years ago. It was late afternoon on Sunday, May 22nd, 2011, when one of the deadliest tornadoes in the U.S.'s history struck Joplin, Missouri. That catastrophic EF5 multiple vortex tornado killed 160 people. Joining me now, Brandon McCoy. He's a Joplin, Missouri resident, a resident at the time of that 2011 tornado. Brandon, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Thank you. We met briefly when I was there for the 1 year anniversary and looking at the recovery going on in Joplin, Missouri. You were working at the hospital that was devastated when the tornado struck. Give us the memory you have of the moment that the tornado passed over.
It was really unbelievable. You see a lot of the people interviewed in Moore, Oklahoma, and it pretty much describes it spot on. You just don't really know what happened. A lot of people coming out of the wreckage, not really knowing what exactly hit them. A lot of people describing it looks like an atom bomb just went off right in your town, and that's exactly what it looks like. A lot of us didn't even hear the sirens. And when we came out from where we were hiding, you just looked out on the landscape and you're just like, what happened? Why is this happening? And where am I?
Mm-hmm. And then at the hospital, a short time afterwards, of course, people sought out the hospital for all kinds of horrendous injuries.
Yes, sir.
Has this been hard to take, to listen, watch the reporting going on in Oklahoma? Has it brought it back to you?
A little bit, yes. And honestly, I try to be knowledgeable of it, but I try to avoid too many details. Just try to watch the news on how to help and how to donate and things like that. But I have tried to avoid like individual stories and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Your house, you were not present at your house in Joplin, but I believe it was your house, a several-story house that was literally lifted off its foundation and flipped like a pancake into the street.
Yes, sir, it was.
What is the status of reconstruction in Joplin for the affected area, which was several miles long?
It has come along very nicely, especially for only in 2 years. You don't see any signs of the tornado anymore, any debris or wreckage anywhere. There's still a lot of open spots around the city, but nothing compared to what it was even a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing seeing all the houses that have sprouted up, all the businesses and everything. We maybe even have a lot of businesses that weren't here before the tornado have come to Joplin. And then a lot of people have been moving to Joplin for a lot of the construction efforts. And it's really amazing to see how far this town has come in 2 years.
Has a lot of the construction been made, reconstruction been made with withstanding storms in the future?
I'm sorry.
Has the construction that's been going on in Joplin, most of it been of a different sort so that it can better withstand such a storm?
Oh, yes. Very definite. You see a lot more storm shelters popping up in people's backyards or attached to the side of the house. A lot of businesses are making their buildings a lot more sturdier, a lot more customer-friendly for storms and situations like that, especially the new Mercy Hospital. That's one of the big things that they've been very concentrating on is the different features that they can allow to prepare themselves for a situation like this to ever happen again.
Brandon McCoy in Joplin, stand by, please. I want to welcome also Nate Snook and Bill Gallus. Nate Snook is a postdoctoral research scientist at the Center for Analysis and Prediction of Storms in Norman, Oklahoma. Nate, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Bill Gallus, a professor of at Iowa State University's Department of Geological and Atmospheric Sciences. Bill Gallus, hi.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you join us. You're both in Oklahoma, not at Moore, Oklahoma. But Nate, let's start with you with the few minutes that we have. I understand you've met with several damage surveyors who were in Moore, Oklahoma. Give us an idea of what was surveyed, what was seen.
Yeah, I've spoken with a couple of people who'd been surveying the storm damage up there, and what they found was damage ranging anywhere from minor damage near the beginning or the end of the storm track to very intense EF5 damage in the middle portion of the storm track. EF0 to EF5 is the EF scale. 0 is the weakest, 5 is the strongest, so the Moore tornado was at the very top end of the scale. The damage path was at most about 1.3 miles wide, with the most intense damage right in the middle of that track. The kind of damage that surveyors saw, there were cars that were overturned or destroyed. In one place, there were cars piled up against the side of a building. There were trees that were stripped of all of their leaves and most of their branches. Other trees were uprooted. And in the most severely damaged areas, the destruction was essentially total. Entire houses were blown clean off their foundations, and the debris was scattered downwind. In fact, one of the things that officials on the scene did was to replace the street signs that had been knocked down. Because the damage was so severe that it was difficult for people on the scene to get a bearing where they were, since all the recognizable landmarks had been destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Bill Gallus, fortunately for most of us, it's hard to imagine the force that comes with an EF5 tornado. Give us a sense of that, because I know you surveyed the aftermath in Joplin. What can a wind do to seemingly impenetrable structures?
Well, one of the most amazing things we saw in Joplin were the parking stops near the hospital, which typically weigh 250 to 300 pounds and are, you know, flush with the ground and have metal rebar holding them in place. And those were actually picked up by the tornado winds and tossed a good 20 or 30 feet away. We were able to take some measurements from the wind simulation and testing laboratory at Iowa State, where we have a tornado simulator, and couple that with the dimensions of those parking stops to conclude that the winds had to be over 205 miles per hour right down at the ground level. So that was one of the more spectacular findings, in our opinion. In addition, you saw in a few places 2x4s that had actually penetrated these concrete parking stops at the ground level.
Wooden 2x4s going through concrete.
Yes.
that is an amazing thing to think about. Will you, Bill Gallus at Iowa State University, be studying this tornado specifically in Moore?
We will not be doing in-person damage survey of the Moore tornado, but we'll probably be looking closely at some of the videos and the documentation taken by others from Moore, just to try to see if we were seeing some of the same things with the EF5 damage in Moore that we were finding in Joplin.
Mm-hmm. Nate Snook, what were the weather conditions on Monday that led to this strong tornado, not only strong EF5 with winds over 200 miles an hour, but it didn't come and go very quickly? It was on the ground how long?
The tornado was on the ground, according to the official damage survey, about 50 minutes.
50.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 50.
What, can you tell us anything about the weather conditions that go into an EF5?
The primary ingredients that you need for strong tornadoes are high instability in the atmosphere, that is, a lot of heat and moisture that the storm can draw on for its energy, and also wind shear, which rotates with height. That helps to impart the spin in the spinning updraft of a supercell thunderstorm that can produce a strong tornado. We had both of those in place on May 20th. We also had a dry line, which is a boundary between moist and dry air, that helped to focus and initiate the storms that produced the Moore tornado.
Mm-hmm. Bill Gallas, can you tell me why a funnel cloud comes down to meet the ground, becoming a tornado, and what determines how long it travels on the ground?
You've just asked some very difficult questions that I think, you know, there's a lot of scientific research still taking place to try to understand the answers to those questions better. You know, the funnel cloud will descend to the ground if you can start getting sufficient spin to make its way down to the ground. And one of the things that we've learned over the last 10 or 20 years is not all tornadoes descend from the clouds. In some cases, it appears the spin can actually start near the ground, and you may have spin up in the thunderstorm cloud, and they can be separated even by a distance of a few miles. And then something can happen where the mid-level spin up higher in the sky can get closer to the low-level spin and then link up. So, you know, it's really rather hard to say, you know, what causes the funnel cloud to descend to the ground. There's different things going on.
Brandon McCoy, you were at the hospital devastated in the Joplin tornado. Many survivors talk of just having a weird sense about the weather before the tornado arrived, before it came down. I don't know if you were able to be outside at that time, but what can you tell us about the weather prior to that tornado?
I wasn't able to be outside too much. I did see the so-called black wall that everyone speaks of just minutes before the tornado actually hit. But as if, like, when I went into work just 2.5 hours earlier, it didn't even look like we're going to have a thunderstorm. You know, partly cloudy, sunny day, beautiful day, and then, you know, as we all know, 2 hours later, we had that happen. So you always need to be careful and always need to be aware of what weather situations are being called and what warnings. And don't take them lightly. You need to actually pay attention to them.
Right. And don't think you're going to see the funnel cloud come down and be able to escape it. It may be right on top of you.
No. Because, and the other thing that's commonly said is, we just thought it was a low-hanging cloud. The tornado was so wide and so large that people didn't comprehend that that was an actual tornado on the ground.
Bill Gallas, this is the so-called black wall. What was that black wall? Was it rain?
I was just going to say, you know, I think a lot of people are used to the picture of a tornado like was seen in The Wizard of Oz. And when a funnel is relatively narrow, it will look very much like it did in that movie. But some of these EF5 tornadoes that have hit in recent years have been extremely wide. I think Nate mentioned the Moore tornado was 1.3 miles wide. I know Joplin was roughly a mile wide as well. And if you think about it, something that's a mile wide as it's getting close to you is going to pretty much fill your, you know, your field of view as you're looking in that direction. So you're just going to see the tornado as a giant wall. And especially in Joplin, the tornado was very rain-wrapped, meaning you did have a lot of rain curtains spiraling around the tornado as well, which again would have given you that appearance of just a massive black wall approaching.
Nate Snook, since Oklahoma is prone to tornadoes, I think even more so than up further north here in Iowa, why don't more residents have storm shelters or basements?
That's a good question. Storm shelter, it's possible here to build specially designed safe rooms above ground, since a lot of the houses don't have basements. And those are reinforced steel and concrete structures that are specially designed to protect a family or a larger group of people from the type of wind and debris that you can see in a high-end tornado. And really, a specially designed shelter like that, either underground or in a safe room above ground, is the only way to really provide safety in those high-end tornadoes. But installing one of those shelters in an existing home or building it into a new home can add several thousand dollars to the cost of the home or cost several thousand dollars to retrofit. And in a state like Oklahoma, where the median income is well below the national average, that can be a very expensive thing for a lot of families. Also, I don't believe that the building codes in most places require that these are added. So in a lot of places, they choose not to.
Mm-hmm. Of course, to get to a safe place or a safer place, you have to have warning. Did the people in Oklahoma, in Moore, Oklahoma, Nate, have adequate warning?
The tornado warning on the storm that produced the Moore tornado was issued about 16 minutes before the tornado touched down. So for those on in the western portion of the track, they would have had maybe 15 or 16 minutes to get to shelter. Those farther east in the eastern portion of Moore would have had probably a bit longer. And there was really good coverage by the local media. They had news copters up in the air showing live video and giving a kind of a play-by-play update on where the tornado was and where it was moving. So there was a pretty good warning with this storm.
Bill Gallus, what if you can't get to a safe room? There's no basement. What do you do?
There's been a lot of debate because we know that being in an automobile and being hit by a tornado is one of the worst places you can be. And so I know in Oklahoma, with some of these very large tornadoes that have been videoed by helicopters live, they've told people that if you don't have a safe room, if you don't have an underground shelter, you know, get out of the way because you probably won't survive. Which can be good advice if you can drive out of the way. The fear is that if you would get caught in, say, a traffic jam, then you're going to have big problems. And so, you know, I think officially the severe weather community has not made a unified statement on what we think is best. You know, I think if you're in an area where it appears the roads will be clear and you know you don't have a very strong shelter and you know that the tornado is a high-end tornado, then yes, you should try to drive perpendicular to it, which would normally mean head north or head south, since most tornadoes are coming from a westerly direction.
Very briefly, we have about a minute left. We talk about global warming having an impact on severe weather, making it more intense. Is there any way to tell if there is an increase or in tornado frequency or intensity with climate change? Bill Gallus?
One of the things that's very interesting about tornadoes, and Nate alluded to this earlier, tornadoes need lots of instability, which means a lot of heat and moisture at low levels of the atmosphere, and they also need a lot of wind shear. So with global warming, we know that conditions might be warming up and becoming more humid down low, which should allow storms to be stronger. But there's also a lot of evidence the wind shear may weaken as we have the planet warming. So we actually see two conflicting factors here. We don't know which one's going to have the more powerful effect. And, you know, I think this can be demonstrated. The last year was one of the quietest periods we've had for tornadoes. But just before that, we had a year that had almost a record number of tornadoes. So we're tending to find these big extremes happening with lots of types of severe weather. But we really can't say for sure that we'll have more tornadoes or less tornadoes in the future as the planet warms up.
Bill Gallus, professor in Iowa State University's Department of Geological and Atmospheric Sciences, currently in Oklahoma. Nate Snook, yes, related to Kurt Snook of our classical service, he's Kurt's son. Thank you for joining us, postdoctoral research scientist at the Center for Analysis and Prediction of Storms in Norman, Oklahoma. Nate, thank you.
Thank you.
And Brandon McCoy, thank you for joining us from Joplin, Missouri.
Thank you.
Okay. When we come back, well, I'll talk with the mayor of Parkersburg, also the police chief at the time of the tornado strike there in 2008, that EF5 tornado that killed 7 people in the Parkersburg, New Hartford area. We'll talk about that with survivors in just a moment. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The deadly tornado earlier this week in Oklahoma recalls other recent tornado disasters here in the Midwest. In a few minutes, we'll hear from survivors of the devastating tornado in Joplin, Missouri in 2011. But first, tornado devastation and recovery here in Iowa. 5 years ago, this month, on May 25th, 2008, 7 people died in the town of Parkersburg and 2 in nearby New Hartford when an EF5 tornado struck. There were at least 70 who were injured, more than 400 homes damaged, 288 houses completely destroyed, more than 20 businesses destroyed. Joining us now to recall that day and the 5 years of recovery since, we have the mayor of Parkersburg, Perry Bernard. Welcome to our program.
Thank you very much.
You've been in office 4 years. You were not mayor at the time of the tornado, a city council member at that time, I understand.
Actually, just right afterwards.
Okay. You became the city council member. Also joining us by phone, Chris Luring. He is the Parkersburg city clerk who was police chief at the time of the tornado. Welcome to you, Chris.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I'd like to start off by having each of you recall your individual experiences on that day. And what stands out for you in hindsight, now 5 years along. Mayor Bernard, you had one of the houses that was completely destroyed, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it was.
Tell us about that day for you and your family.
We knew there were some storms predicted for the afternoon. It was just kind of a normal day. Kids were playing out in the backyard. My wife and I were doing our normal weekend cleaning of the house and just cleaned my grill, looking forward to a good grilling season.
Mm-hmm.
And as that afternoon, the storms are kind of building up. We're getting some more warnings, thunderstorm warnings, that normal stuff. And I also had my niece and nephew over at the time, too. So we said, well, it might be time for you guys to go home. So we got them home. Got the kids in the house, and my youngest son at the time, just over a year old, we laid him down upstairs for his nap. And it was kind of an odd day. It was very humid, very sticky. It's just kind of a different feeling that day.
Mm-hmm. And at what point did the siren sound? How long before the actual high winds hit?
I think it was just a few minutes. It was actually very quick. We were watching the local news station. Once the more major warnings kind of came out, we got the boys and went down into the basement, kind of the normal routine for storms. But mm-hmm. So we were watching the local news. One tornado warning did pop up, and it wasn't long after that they canceled it. And it just seemed like a few minutes from that point, they came back on and said there was one on the ground.
And you're still down in the basement at this time?
Yep. My wife and my two boys were down in the basement.
And you were upstairs?
Well, yeah. I did the typical guy thing and went upstairs.
Okay. Went out on the lawn, probably got a lawn chair out. No.
Well, I went out on the back deck.
Okay.
And it was about that point I looked to the west, because we're kind of right off the highway, so I can look right down the highway. And as I looked west, I saw the tornado but didn't realize that's what it was at the time, because it was right before it actually hit town.
Mm-hmm. Was it shrouded in rain or anything like that?
No, actually it wasn't. It wasn't even raining at that point. It was eerily still, and I could see it, but it wasn't the typical wedge. It just looked like a massive wall. It was straight up and down on both sides.
When did you decide you needed to join the others in the basement?
Well, I saw one of the fire trucks come up the highway, turn the corner, and it took off the opposite way. And noticed some cars doing some erratic driving, and then I kind of looked back to the west again, and it was about that point when I saw buildings exploding and debris flying up in the air. So I knew what it was at that point. And I think I took about 2 steps from the deck all the way down into the basement.
And I imagine so. What did you hear down in the basement when the tornado actually passed over?
I think we kind of, after it went through, we realized that the eye of the tornado actually went directly over our house. But during the time, I had my wife and boys covered up with a blanket. We were underneath the only set of steps we had in the basement. And we had some windows on the west side of the house. And so all I could do is had them covered up, had some cushions from a sofa, and I'm looking out the windows on the west side as the thing is closing in. And it was, you know, everybody asked me, does it sound like a freight train? And I don't know if anybody's been around a 747 standing directly behind it when it's wide open. It is the loudest, most intense sound I've ever heard in my life. My wife was actually, her head was right next to mine. She was screaming as loud as she possibly could, and it drowned her out. I couldn't hear her.
Amazing.
And then the pressure from the tornado was so intense. I mean, all of us, we thought our heads were just going to explode. It's almost indescribable.
What were your thoughts when you emerged from your house?
Initially, after it passed over and it just became dead silent, it seemed like somebody took 1,000 gallons of water and 1,000 pounds of dirt and dust and just dumped it into our basement. So it took us a couple minutes to be able to breathe and see what we were doing and where we were going. So I told my wife, I said, just sit here for a second. So I started going up the stairs, and I realized I was seeing light through the walls, and our stairway was in the middle of the house, and I thought, that doesn't look right. Mm. It shouldn't be that way. So when I did get up to the doorway, and that happened to be the only section of our entire house that was left out of a whole two-story, I couldn't get the door open. We had debris that was blocking the door, so I kind of stuck my head out, and first thing I noticed was my neighbor's house was gone, and then I could see all the way across to where my wife's mom and dad live, and their house was totally leveled. It looked like an atom bomb went off and just leveled everything.
Mm-hmm. Did you lose any friends or family in the disaster?
Fortunately, no. We kind of feel like everybody in Parkersburg is family in some way, so in a sense, yes, we did, but no, we didn't lose any immediate.
Chris Luring, you're on the telephone line. You were police chief at the time in Parkersburg. Tell us about that day 5 years ago for you.
You know, as Perry stated, it was a pretty beautiful day where you'd want to get out the grill and stay outside or be in the air conditioner because it was pretty sticky and damp. I happened to be north of Parkersburg at the time at my in-law's house. My wife had just gotten the kids up from nap and had come out there. I was doing some gardening, and we usually spend a lot of time with family on Sundays. But it was towards the middle of the afternoon, late in the afternoon, where I'll never forget that constant rumbling in the distance, the sky turning a very eerie green, and things just became really ominous. And those are sights and sounds and things that you hear that you'll never forget. But shortly after going in the house, I'll never forget my father-in-law came up the stairs of their place, and he says, "It's time for you to go." And it was almost like we looked at each other, and I knew what he was going to say before he said it, and I knew that there was something going on that drastically and dramatically needed my attention. So at that point, I headed into Parkersburg with my brother-in-law to try to get my police car and to try to figure out exactly what was going on at that time.
Where were you actually when the storm passed over?
I was about 4 or 5 miles north of Parkersburg, out of my father and mother-in-law's place.
Mm-hmm. What did you see? You can't see 4 or 5 miles, but
no.
What was the first evidence you saw of the storm?
You know, my father-in-law has said for a long, long time that when there's hail larger than pea size, there's a potential of a tornado on the ground, and the hail out there was baseball and even bigger sized. So at that point, that's when we knew something was going on. When I came into town, I remember telling my brother-in-law, "I can see the water tower. That's a good thing." And before we had left, my wife's uncle, or somebody had made a phone call stating that my wife's uncle's house was in the middle of the street. And that was really hard to process, but you don't say that very often. So I knew that there was something seriously going on. And then coming into Parkersburg from the north, you know, things didn't look quite that bad. It took you a little bit longer. And literally from one block to another, it changed from EF0 to EF5, literally in the span of 1 or 2 blocks. And when I saw that for the first time, I knew we had a serious, serious problem on our hands.
Hundreds of homes damaged, 288 homes completely destroyed, 20 yes. businesses completely destroyed. If the two of you were to take me to Parkersburg today, how would it be a different Parkersburg, at least outwardly, visually?
Yes. You know, we've had a lot of researchers and scientists come, and I remember trying to help one of these guys come into town one day, and I says, you know, the only sign you're going to see is a lack of mature adult trees. And he laughed, and I didn't really understand why he laughed until he came to town. And he was just talking about, I cannot believe that you guys have all the debris picked up. I cannot believe you don't have a house still, you know, half destroyed. I can't believe you don't have any cars. And this was 2 years after our tornado. And I said, so you laughed when I talked about lack of mature adult trees because you assumed you'd see other stuff. He goes, that's correct. He goes, you guys have done an amazing job. And I says, well, that's just how things are here. It wasn't surprising to me at all. But really, truly, when you come into Parkersburg, we've had people say, this is kind of a weird development. Everybody, the developer kind of built different houses. And when I described to people that this isn't a development, these are individuals who lost their homes and had to rebuild their homes after an EF5 tornado, and I show them some pictures. And they're really, really blown away. They're mesmerized by the fact that this happened, that it could be so destructive, but that our recovery has been so quick. It really is a good example, I think, for other communities our size.
Talk about the rebuilding of the community in another sense. I'm sensing from you that it brought the even close-knit community of Parkersburg even closer together as members. But what needed to be rebuilt or attended to that was not a physical structure?
You know, one of the hardest things to figure out is the debris. The debris itself is like a carpeting effect across the landscape. And those in Joplin, those in Moore, Oklahoma, and those in other places that have been hit know what that carpeting effect looks like. And so just the physical nature of the landscape itself, you cannot rebuild your house until the debris is taken away, until it's taken care of. And that's one of the, you know, the primary functions of the city and of the government is to work on getting that taken care of, to get those funds necessary to pay for that, and to work with our state and federal regional partners to do as much as we possibly can do in the right way as fast as you possibly can do it.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Bernard, I wonder, what were your thoughts when you first heard, as we all did, of the devastation in Oklahoma? I'm imagining a different perspective from someone who rode out a tornado in the basement with your family and fearing for your lives, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was actually I was at a bank doing some banking, and they had a TV on when it was actually live happening. And you just kind of get a sick feeling because you know exactly what's going on. And you're just praying that everybody took cover and everybody's in a safe spot. Unfortunately, with our tornado and a tornado that size, even being in a safe spot isn't safe. It was an awful feeling. And then after the tornado went through, the helicopters were overhead and showing people running and just hugging each other and crying and going through all the emotions. And yeah, it brought back a lot of memories. Just like I said, I know exactly how they're feeling, and you want to be there to console them. But
yeah. If you just joined us, my guests, this portion of the program, Perry Bernard, he is the mayor of Parkersburg, and Chris Luring, who is the city clerk of Parkersburg, recalling the tornado that struck Parkersburg 5 years ago on May 25th, 2008. It took the lives of 7 people in that town, 2 lives it took in nearby New Hartford. And I wonder if each of you could talk to the residents of Moore, Oklahoma, who are still reeling after a few days after that awful tornado that struck the town. What would you tell them? What would you tell them to encourage them?
You know, I would just start off with telling them that our thoughts and our concerns and our prayers are with them. A lot of times people say, well, what would you tell them from an advice perspective? And I can honestly tell you, those folks down there, they're the nation's experts when it comes to recovering from disasters such as this. I mean, they are the people that we would call if we were hit. And this is something they've experienced in the past, and their resiliency is something that I think Americans should be greatly proud of and thankful for, that we possess such a resilient population, and that the folks down there know that America has them in our prayers. And we wish them the best, and if they need help, they can call and ask for help, because the American public, the folks here in Iowa after our tornado, in the Midwest and throughout the United States, were so supportive and just were willing to do about whatever we needed to have done at a moment's notice in order to help us out. And that is something you can't necessarily put into context unless you've experienced it. So I hope the folks in Moore, if they haven't experienced it in the past, I pray they experience it in the future here shortly.
Mayor Bernard?
Yeah, I have to totally agree with Chris. And I kind of wrote a note to the people on the computer this morning, you know, about this. Again, knowing all the emotions, the emotional roller coaster that they're going to go through.
Did you actually write it and send it to them, or was it more for yourself?
Well, it was actually on the Facebook, mm-hmm. You know, kind of in the hopes that, you know, how that works, it'll get out there. Hopefully right. somebody will see it. You know, it's just something that was kind of in my mind this morning. I wanted to get out.
Can you give us a gist of it?
Yeah, I just, you know, I said, you know, at this time, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with them. You know, going through this 5 years ago, we know exactly the emotions of it. You know, you have to grieve for the ones you lost, but then, you know, praise the Lord for the ones that survived. And, you know, there's going to be a time when you have to ask for help, and that was a hard thing for us to do, too. You know, we've got a lot of pride. You know, we work hard for what we've got, and there's just times where you have to set that pride aside and say, okay, I need help. And that's a big thing for them, too, is, you know, we're in America. We're in the greatest place in the whole world where everybody supports each other and helps each other out in these kind of situations. And again, they've got to ask for help, but the help is going to be there anyway for them. And if they have, you know, they've just got to stand up, grieve, take their grieving time, and dig in and start rebuilding.
I wonder if we could end by asking you to go from the dark, the devastation, the loss, the grieving, and tell us, looking back over the past 5 years, what have been perhaps the unexpected joys, the greatest joys of recovering from this kind of disaster. Chris Luring, can you start us?
You know, one of the things that I always appreciate having little ones at home, I have five little ones at home. At the time the tornado hit, I had three, and my wife was pregnant with our fourth. But just seeing my kids just grow up and almost appreciate the weather. I'm very careful how I say that because I don't want to state it wrong. But the other night when it was raining, my wife and I, we brought them outside and we talked about, yes, weather can be dangerous, but that it was created for beauty also. And those types of healing processes have taken a long time. The kids in Parkersburg have taken a long time to recover. Our high school students who just graduated suffered the loss of the high school, a lot of transitions, the loss of their homes. But at the end of the day, I think Parkersburg residents appreciate life, value family, value friends, and value faith much more, maybe profoundly, than what we did in the past. And sometimes people have suggested, well, you know, your kids probably lost their adolescence in a lot of ways. But I'm careful because while on one hand they did, but now they take life a lot more seriously. Life is fleeting, and it's fragile, and it's frail, and it's something to be appreciated. And that truly, I think, is a gift in a strange, maybe sort of way to us here in Parkersburg.
Perry Bernard, what are the gifts that you've found, the joy that you found 5 years after this tornado?
Yeah, it's hard to add to what Chris just said. He was right on. I think definitely for our family, too, you know, we had two boys at the time. We were blessed with twin girls that are three now. And it's the same thing. I think everybody has realized what's truly important in life. And it's unfortunate to have to go through something like that to make you realize what is truly important. And family and friends are always there. You know, everybody lost material things, but that's all it is material things. It really doesn't mean anything. And even I think a lot of the kids realize that too. I mean, they really... they're really there for their friends, and it's brought a lot of people together. Again, it's unfortunate to have to do it that way, you know, to go through a natural disaster to bring people together. But, you know, and I kind of, as this gets out, I would hope people really step back and say, you know, that haven't gone through this or hopefully never will, but realize, yeah, family and friends, that's truly what it's all about.
Mayor of Parkersburg, Harry Bernard, thank you very much. Chris Luring, Parkersburg City Clerk, it's been a pleasure having you with us to recall Parkersburg's devastation and its magnificent recovery. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mayor Bernard and I wish the folks in Oklahoma and elsewhere that suffered devastation recently our best, and our prayers are out to them.
Yes, yeah, so definitely.
Little tornado blew out the window pane, left the inside.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River available by going to our website, iowapublicradio.org. And you can contact us anytime with your comments and questions. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Once again, that's River to River at iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.